I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. After a series of violent, unprovoked attacks, Washington State's governor still says Seattle is a world-class city. Plus, former Washington Governor Christine Gregoire, a Democrat, has some harsh words for current leadership. And we brace for protests at a Saturday event after the Seattle Times decided to put a target on our back. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for $5 a month. And in fact, it's less than that right now because we're running a promo through the end of May. Go to patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code USA30 for 30% off an entire year. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here for our final live show of the week. Thank you so much for your support of the show, your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We do appreciate it. Just 2 weeks or so until the World Cup, and Seattle is having a very, very bad news cycle. And it's not just your imagination. There has been a flurry of violent, unprovoked attacks in the downtown core that's going to be flooded with World Cup fans in a matter of weeks. Just a couple of the stories that you've probably seen that we've talked about on this show. There is, of course, that individual who allegedly pulled a 15-year-old girl into the woods where he raped her. It was a homeless guy. There was an unprovoked attack with a hammer in downtown Seattle where a young man was beaten over the head at random, completely unprovoked. He's clinging for life right now at Harborview Medical Center. There was also, of course, that video that was shown around the world of the elderly man right in downtown Seattle. And two young black men, for no reason in the world, beat him. And he suffered serious injuries. There was a runner along the waterfront, which, again, high-density tourist area, who was attacked at random in Little Saigon. Not a surprise, considering they've pushed a lot of the drug dealers and users there. A man robbed a business at knife point, and those are just a few of the headlines that have come out in the last few weeks. So, of course, they're more than just headlines, and I think that that's always important for us to acknowledge that these crimes are more than a political talking point, although it is really important that we discuss the state of things in Seattle, not just ahead of the World Cup, but always. But there are real people at the center of these crimes as well, and their families are suffering, and they're suffering even more so given the fact that you have a political leadership that just doesn't seem to care very much, that seems to be doing all these virtue signaling things that are just making the community less safe, making people less safe, and making it more likely that we're going to see these crimes continue. So one of these attacks that we haven't talked about individually on the show yet, this is the headline from Como News: unprovoked attack in downtown Seattle leaves man with critical head trauma. And I'll tell you that headline doesn't even come close to summing up the horrendous nature of this attack. So there was a young man named George Miller who was, and look, he's, from our understanding, dealing with some substance abuse issues, but he wasn't bothering anyone. He was sitting in I think it was on the steps of a business hotel after hours, and a man came up to him from behind with a hammer and beat him over the head repeatedly. He's at Harborview Medical Center. He has not regained consciousness. Doctors don't know if he's going to. This happened 10 days ago. Seattle police not only haven't arrested anyone, despite this attack happening on video, they've never released an image of the suspect. They've never released an image, even if, I mean, my understanding is he was wearing some pretty distinctive clothing. And maybe they have some sort of reason for this, but you've got a guy who 10 days ago came up to someone at random and beat them more than a dozen times over the head with a hammer. Don't you think the public at large deserves to know who they're looking out for? We were contacted by George's mother. Her name is Lisa. She lives up in Arlington. And she got that call in the middle of the night that no mother ever wants to get. She described to us not only what happened, but she says police told her, they gave her a description of the suspect, but haven't given the public one.
They told me that he was wearing dark clothing, that he had a white bucket hat type. The only It was described to me as like a Gilligan's Island type of hat,
Okay.
sort of a white fishing hat, round and edges all the way around the side. So a white bucket hat, dark clothing.
They tell you
I
what
initially
race?
dark skinned, and a backpack. And that he was walking down Madison. I was told that he appeared to be hunting rather than it was a target. He saw my son, leaned over, crossed the street, took a hammer out of the back of his backpack, and hit him in the back of the head, and then just repeatedly hit him over and over and over and walked away.
And we don't even know. No idea what he looks like, what he could possibly be wearing. And if this is someone who lives on the streets, which I imagine it is, chances are he doesn't have too many outfits, right? Chances are he might still be wearing that bucket hat around. And they've only told her, and they haven't told the public. And look, I understand that, maybe they know who this is and they're just trying to find him and not tip him off or something, that he's a potential suspect. But Nicole contacted the Seattle Police Department and said, hey, why haven't you put out. It's understanding you told the victim's mother that this attack is on video. Why haven't you put out a still of it or something? And they said, we're working on it, essentially, right? We're working on it. So it's not that they don't want to put it out. You're working on it after 10 days? He attacked someone brutally with a hammer. And you told the mother that it seemed like he was hunting. And that's why, and I imagine it was very difficult for her to reach out to speak with us. She's been spending a lot of time down at Harborview. She has to drive 45 minutes to Arlington. She's sitting there reading to her son, even though he's, not conscious, not responding to her. Just a horrible thing for a mother to go through. Absolutely awful. But she said she wants people to know that, like, look, Seattle is not safe right now.
I just want people out there to be careful, be aware of their surroundings when they're walking around. That's another reason I would want the suspect's photo to be given out to the public so that they could watch out for this person. I want justice and I want safety for others.
And what is it? Is it that her son George was also living on the streets and dealing with a drug issue that she was trying to get him help for? She was trying to get him, to turn his life around. This is a story we've heard many times. It affects families from all different socioeconomic statuses. It doesn't discriminate based on politics. It doesn't matter if you're living on the streets or if you're visiting downtown for the World Cup. You don't deserve to have someone take a hammer to the back of your head. And I don't know if that's maybe why it's not getting enough attention or why an image of the suspect hasn't been put out. Is it because the suspect's black? I don't know what it is. But to me, it's unacceptable, and I haven't been given a good excuse for it. And if he can take a hammer to the back of the head of George, just sitting there minding his own business, doing nothing, he can take a hammer to the back of the head of a World Cup fan. And maybe the city needs it to be a World Cup fan. In order to actually care about the reality that we have mentally ill, drug addicted predators roaming the streets looking for victims. And then you've got our ass hat governor yesterday having a press conference about the World Cup, and with all these headlines, all this stuff going on, says this.
Look, you don't get to host a World Cup match. Series of matches, unless you're a world-class city, full stop. That competition is intense. They don't just hand these things out to anybody. You've got to have an exceptional city, exceptional partners, exceptional team, exceptional infrastructure, exceptional transportation system, all that, and more.
We're a world-class city. Everything about our city is exceptional. I mean, the tone deaf. And I'm not saying, and I've been clear, I don't think that it's too dangerous in Seattle to host the World Cup. But let's not pretend that things are going well for this city. I mean, the World Cup is hosted at a lot of different places on the planet that have more profound societal issues than we have here. But Seattle hasn't been a world-class city for 10 years. And if you're going to call yourself a world-class city and pretend to be a world-class city, then you should want to deal with the third world problems that are plaguing our streets, like the homeless crisis, the drug crisis, the random crime crisis, the mental health crisis. Not just ignore it or push it away to Chinatown until the world's eyes are off the city. I mean, to say that, how tone deaf can you be? it's outrageous. And then he was bragging about how, you know, we're going to basically make it easy for people to use our wonderful, again, exceptional public transportation system to get down to the World Cup games.
I was reading an article, a national article, about some other jurisdictions and the challenges they're having trying to get folks to their stadiums. A headline in one article said, high prices in store for fans in some U.S. host cities. Individuals have to pay a lot of money to take a train or a bus to get to stadiums that are not in the central core of their downtown. It's the exact opposite experience here. These shuttles that you see behind us are going to be free on match day. We're in Seattle going the opposite direction, making it accessible and cost-friendly for folks who want to attend this wonderful, wonderful experience.
Our transit's always been cost-friendly because nobody pays their fares. You guys suspended fare collection because it was racist, according to the Seattle Times. And then you tried to re-implement fare enforcement, and you gave out like 8 tickets and gave like 3,000 warnings, and still no one's paying. Oh, and then there's that little thing about the testing that the University of Washington did that found that there was like meth and fentanyl smoke and residue in 100% of your King County buses. So yeah, it should be reasonable. Why not let people ride in the meth-filled bus for free? So I mean, that's the one thing that you think the city has going for it. And again, I'm not... Like, Mexico, I think there's even this time around World Cup games being played in places in Mexico that have been, you know, at the center of cartel violence. I'm not acting like there are other cities are not as dangerous as Seattle. But you can't call it a world-class city and refuse to deal with the crises that are going on or just pretend that they're not happening at all. And, oh, we give free shuttles and all of a sudden we're ready to host the World Cup. It's ridiculous. Ignoring it doesn't make the problem go away. Pretending like it doesn't exist does not make the problem not exist. And then we have some updates on some of these other random violent attacks that have been happening and just how, like, look, if there's a criminal who's unhinged or whatever it is, who's going to hurt someone, sometimes it's hard to prevent that. And that could happen in any city in America. But we have this particular issue in the city of Seattle and in blue jurisdictions where these violent attacks aren't happening out of thin air. The suspects are people who have been known to police, people who have been known to have mental health breaks, people who are drug addicted, people who have violent histories, and people who have time and time again been let off and let off and let off until they do something so violent that finally the system says, okay, I guess we got to hold them this time. So one of them is the homeless guy who dragged that 15-year-old girl, allegedly, into the woods and raped her in North Seattle. Joshua Kowaleski, a 36-year-old homeless guy, 28 arrests, 13 convictions over a 19-year span, multiple outstanding warrants, 9 active warrants across 5 jurisdictions at the time he was arrested for this crime. And in fact, just a couple weeks before he was arrested for this crime, despite having those active warrants, the city of Seattle, on what I think was a Voxa charge, a drug charge, gave him like this deferred sweetheart prosecution and just let him walk free, despite having active warrants for failure to appear for crimes in other jurisdictions. So this guy gets arrested, as you know, because he was like burning crap and a T-shirt in the middle of the street and matched the description that this 15-year-old girl gave. So he was in court and he's pled not guilty. His bail set at $1 million. You see that picture right there used by Fox 13? Isn't that a weird picture? Well, it's just his chest. Why aren't you showing me this guy's face? Because we really can't make it out in that blurry surveillance image. The activist judge told the media you can't record his face. It's insane. He's been charged with rape, a violent crime. And especially when you have a crime like that with a sexual motivation, you know what showing his face does? It allows other victims to say, hey, that guy raped me too. Or hey, that guy victimized me too. But no, the entire criminal justice system is about protecting the criminals. It's about justice for criminals. And I'll tell you on this front, you guys know I used to cover crime in my very first year when I came to Seattle 15 years ago. I was like a 21-year-old reporter. I was a crime reporter for the CBS radio affiliate. I spent day every morning at the courthouse. And then every afternoon, I would go down for first appearances. And then when I was in TV, had a camera with me, and every day we'd go down for major cases. Like, never at that time would judges say, oh, you can't record their face. There would be like a rare instance where maybe the identity of the suspect was in question. And then they would say, okay, you can't, you know, face down, shoulders down. So rare. Now it happens all the time. We covered a case of a homicide at the sentencing phase where the guy pled guilty to the crime. And the activist judge says you can't record his face. There's a rule, and I'll just go into this because it's nerdy, and somebody at some point has to challenge this. There's General Rule 16 that governs the courts. And this is a rule for the media that basically says there's a presumption of open access, meaning the presumption walking in is that you get to record what's happening without limitation, unless there is a compelling, specific reason for the individual case that the judge can articulate not to do so if they get some sort of motion from the defense. But again, they have to articulate it in the moment, and it has to outweigh the public interest in the case. And what did they say for this one? Because the media can object in court. They said, the judge in this case, as to why you're not going to show the face of a guy with a long criminal history, many outstanding warrants, accused of pulling a 15-year-old girl into the woods and raping her, and who admitted to police that he was the guy in the woods. He just said it wasn't rape. Well, the judge said, well, showing his face now could present challenges at trial later. My thought on that is the argument she's making, well, is if this 15-year-old sees his face in the media, it might not be as compelling if he's in trial and she says, well, that's the guy who raped me, right? But that doesn't matter because he already confessed to police that he was in the woods with her. He just said that she wanted to go in the woods with him and that it was consensual. So there's no sort of confusion about who was in the woods with the girl. We know who was in the woods with the girl. So there's literally no reason not to show his face. I will also tell you, we were contacted by a former girlfriend of his who reached out to us and told us via email, and we're trying to get her to go on the record, reached out to us and said, I told police he was going to do something like this because he abused her. We've seen the court documents. She sent us the court documents. He's a domestic abuser. He has a history of violence. And she told the police, if you let him go in the courts, if you let him go without, you know, with a slap on the wrist, he's going to go hurt someone. So she wasn't surprised that her ex, now homeless, drug abuser of an ex-boyfriend, is accused of pulling a 15-year-old girl into the woods and raping her. You see how many failures in the system have to exist for it to get to that kind of crime? Absolutely. And along the way, oh my gosh, I could rant about this forever. What if he had actually got help for his substance abuse issue along the way? At any time, what was the number of 28 arrests, 13 convictions, 46 warrants, at any given time, during any of those interactions with the criminal justice system where he's abusing drugs, drug addicted, which was driving a lot of those sorts of crimes? Some of them were very consistent with crimes committed by a drug abuser. If he had done something that worked, had mandatory treatment anywhere along the way, we wouldn't have a 15-year-old girl whose life has been completely upended because a man pulled her into the woods and raped her. Shameful. Again, it's a justice system for the criminals. It's not a justice system for the victims. We shouldn't even have these victims. Outrageous. The other case that's going on right now. Good news, they arrested the at-large attacker in the attack on that elderly man in downtown Seattle. It was the taller of the two individuals, if you've seen the video of them, for literally no reason, squaring up to this elderly man, 77 years old. He spent 3 weeks in the hospital, broken arm, broken knee, outrageous. So the individual, Ahmed Osman, was located, appeared in court. Bail has been set at $200,000. They let this guy wear a mask in court. Give me a break. Was he wearing a mask on the street? No, he wore a mask to hide his face. Well, guess what? Your face has been out there. There's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube. But I'm surprised the judge even let us. I'm surprised the judge even let Fox 13 and David Rose show his face. Oh, no, he's just a young black youth. Can't ruin his life by showing his face. Absolutely outrageous. We'll see what happens in that case. Another update. So there was the 19-year-old killed in off-campus housing at the University of Washington. And I know all the headlines so far have been, because the 19-year-old is trans, that this was a targeted act of anti-trans hate. No indication of that yet. I'm open to the possibility that that's what motivated this individual, but we just don't know. As far as we know, it was a random act. And there is some information coming out that seems to suggest that. So late yesterday, Seattle police put out very good surveillance images of the suspect, a light-skinned black male. So overnight, apparently that suspect's family recognized him and encouraged him to turn himself in, which he did around 2:30 this morning. His name is Christopher Leahy. He's 31 years old. He lives in Redmond. Turned himself in overnight, and his family says he has a history of being in crisis. Not a surprise. So to me, and again, I'm open to the possibility that this was a hate crime, but I have seen nothing come out from police that would suggest that. And this is an individual with a history of being in crisis. So it could be he just snapped. But if he has a history of being in crisis, what I'd like to know is, during that history, did he have any sort of involvement in the criminal justice system where we could have got him help? So there's a lot happening in the city of Seattle. None of it is a surprise. None of it is a surprise. Not even the weak, cowardly leadership that's diminishing all of it and dismissing all of it. In Katie Wilson and Bob Ferguson, oh, world-class city. World-class city with third-world problems. Outrageous. All right, coming up next, some strong words from former Washington Governor Christine Gregoire about the current state of Seattle and Washington State's leadership. She did not mince words. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend, Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are fantastic, and they've done well for so many Undivided viewers and listeners who are selling their homes, maybe leaving the state, maybe just, you know, moving to a different place in Washington. If you want to go from sellwithwes.com to sold with Wes, go to sellwithwes.com. You can peruse some of the recent listings and what Wes has been able to achieve for clients. And I think the most important thing to do right now is just to get a market analysis, because there are a lot of homes going on the market. A lot, especially in the upper price range, because, you know, the rich people are taking their money and they're getting the hell out of here. But, you know, maybe not as many in that sort of 600,000 to 1.2 million range. And so there's, I think, a different factors you have to consider depending on what price point your home is at. But Wes will give you the lay of the land, tell you how long you can expect to take to sell your home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, former Governor Christine Gregoire, so she was the governor before Jay Inslee. So it was 13 years ago, 14 years ago or so. And she was the governor right when I came to Washington State out of college. And it's funny because I remember at the time, like, you know, Republicans would complain about her and conservatives would complain about her. And I get it. You know, she was a Democrat or whatever it is. But now in comparison, good grief. I mean, she looks so sane. I would love to have Governor Gregoire back. I would in a second, in a heartbeat. And she's left office and she's been involved with the business community and trying to kind of turn things around. And she was at this forum that was on TVW, and she was asked about what's happening with the state with all the taxes and the budget bloat and all of that. And she did not mince words.
Do you think majority leaders understand, do you think our legislature understands the impact of the policy environment as it relates to the economy?
No. I really don't. As evidenced by, you mentioned the estate tax. I argued to some folks about the estate tax. We were the highest in the country, tied with Hawaii at 20%. We went to 35%. We're not just the highest, we're beyond the highest. And I said, now, you understand the consequences of this. Can I see your fiscal note? Because I'd like to help it. Because here's what you can expect. Those people are not homeless. They will not pay. They're leaving. When they leave, they stop paying cap gains. When they leave, they stop giving significantly to philanthropy, which would otherwise be necessary by government. So do you understand, do you see the consequences of what you're doing? And the answer is no.
Yeah, she's basically saying they're stupid. She's basically saying they are economically illiterate. And that's coming from a Democrat who who ran the state for 8 years. And she says they have no idea what they were doing. And she brought up something we've covered on the show. Maybe she watches our show. Or maybe she just knows this because this is a common fact that the Democrats in Olympia have very little private sector experience. Remember, we talked about this on the show last week, and we actually gave you the numbers that compared to Republicans, very few of them have had a job in the private sector. A lot of them are lifelong, you know, career politicians or government employees or union, you know, union laborers or whatever it is. And she pointed that out.
How many people in either of the Democratic caucuses have come from a business past, okay? So if you haven't come from it, you don't know it, you don't understand it, and therefore, to me, we all collectively, and Chris and I have talked a lot about this, have to educate from the outside in. We have to explain things like sales tax on services you thought was a nice attack on big business. And here are the small businesses that have been tremendously adversely impacted, as well as the customers.
Again, it's not rocket science. I'm not an economist, but one of the examples I give all the time is Amazon. Amazon moved 10,000 jobs from Seattle to Bellevue because of the payroll or the jumpstart tax targeting high-paying jobs. So they're like, screw you guys. And you'd have to be dumb, really, to think that that won't trickle down to the businesses that support Amazon's workforce. And that's what she's trying to articulate. She also brought up how much the budget has grown since she left office.
I left office with a budget of $33 billion. And the budget today is $80 billion. I think that's a little bit too much of a growth.
Yeah.
And yet, how we find ourselves at the end of every legislative session now is in the hole and projected to be in the hole. I would suggest to you, we don't really have an income problem. We have a spending problem. And we're answering. And we're answering it by stacking one more tax, one more rule, one more regulation. And the one thing that the business community doesn't need is that lack of predictability.
Yeah, she left office in 2013, and the budget has more than doubled since she left office. And that's, there was one governor, basically, between then and now, Jay Inslee, for three terms. And government bloated that much. Now, I acknowledge that Bob Ferguson has been in office for a year and a half, and he passed the largest package of tax increases, now a new income tax, so he's responsible for some of that bloat. Give him time, don't worry, he'll be responsible for even more. But it's basically one governor that came in there that people put in office for three consecutive terms and grew the size of government by that much. I mean, what she's saying there, those are right-wing talking points, according to the Seattle Times and mainstream Democrats who exist today. But those used to be pretty widely accepted economic realities. That you do this, this will happen. And you can't just say I balanced the budget because you passed, you know, $10 billion in new taxes. That's not balancing the budget. That's just taking more money so you can spend more. So yeah, I take Christine Gregoire back in a second, in a heartbeat. And we just need more sane Democrats like that to start speaking out, because she's not the only Democrat that feels that way about economic policy. But you have so many of them. I railed about it on the show earlier this week in the business community who just sort of like, mind their P's and Q's. Oh, we'll work with them. Not a big deal. Like shrinking little mice. It's like, okay, well, then you deserve everything that comes. I mean, leaving office and then saying these things or you know, leaving the state and then saying these things, it's not particularly helpful, frankly. All right, coming up next, we're bracing for protests at an event I'll be at on Saturday because the Seattle Times thought it would be a good idea to basically make everyone believe that I'm a bigot and the people who are coming are bigots. Thanks, Jim Bruner of the Times. First, I've encouraged you guys for years now to have First Mark Insurance take a second look at your insurance. It doesn't cost you anything, and they're fantastic. They're a local company. They've been doing this for a long time, and they'll just walk through what your needs are, you know, what's going on in your life. And this is true for your private life or your business. I use First Mark for both. And then they'll shop, go out to their market of carriers, come back with their recommendations. And this isn't like, 5 seconds or less save you whatever percentage. look, this is a professional company that wants to make sure that you have good insurance that's going to actually cover everything you've worked hard for in the event that something horrible happens. So it is a balance between making sure you have the right coverage and good coverage and making sure that you're getting it for the lowest possible price. But they do all of that for you. And it's called the First Mark Challenge. I recommend taking the First Mark Challenge today, like so many Undivided viewers and listeners have. Carol says, I took the First Mark Challenge and they actually said my current coverage was good and I should stay with it. She said, true story. That's the sign of an honest company. If they don't think you need to switch, they're not going to tell you to switch. They're going to tell you to do what's best for you. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies, so they always have your best interest in mind. And with that, let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. That was my best Valley Girl. Unbelievable. Boop. So I was planning to have a pretty run-of-the-mill weekend. You know, I have a few events to go to, which isn't unusual this time of year. And an event I'm going to be at on Saturday is the Snohomish County Republican Party's Lincoln Day Dinner. I'm just emceeing the event. And frankly, I didn't even know really who was going to be there. I mean, we agreed to do it like a couple months ago. And I was like, sure, you know, we'll do that. And then all of a sudden, the Seattle Times made this run-of-the-mill Saturday event controversial by running this article on Sunday, "Meet the Seattle Woman Behind a National Effort to End Same-Sex Marriage." In the article, he highlighted a woman named Katie Faust, who I hadn't heard of. I didn't really know what she was all about. I didn't even know she was going to be at the event that I was going to be at. But they talk about how she wants to upend the Supreme Court ruling on same-sex marriage, which, of course, I would be opposed to. I've never been opposed to same-sex marriage in my life. But Jim Bruner of the Times just had to mention that Katie Faust is going to be at this event that I'm going to be at on Saturday. He said, he wrote, "Later this week, Faust is scheduled to speak at the annual Lincoln Day fundraiser dinner for the Snohomish County Republicans, an event to be emceed by Brandi Cruz, the former TV journalist turned conservative activist and podcaster. Other speakers for the dinner include state GOP chair Jim Walsh and Brian Haywood, the Redmond hedge fund manager and initiative financier, who is backing a measure headed for the fall ballot that would ban transgender students from participating in girls' sports at K-12 schools." So just like that, managed to tie me, the head of the state Republican Party, Jim Walsh, and Brian Haywood, while he has these active initiatives, to a woman who he's painting in this article as a right-wing Christian national bigot, essentially. And I said I didn't get the point of it. Even in this article, Jim Bruner acknowledges that Katie Faust is not even, nobody really knows who she is locally. She's more of a national figure. So I'm like, okay, who from the Democrats leaked that to, you know, said, oh, have you checked out this woman who's going to be, I guarantee that's what happened. Jim Bruner denies it, but I guarantee that's what happened. Because the next day, remember, the progressive cabal came out with their complaint against me and Let's Go Washington, and in the press release mentioned Katie Faust. So here's a woman I've never heard of being tied to me and Brian Haywood two times over 2 days. Give me a break. So of course, oh, now the no hate in Washington state and the indivisible groups are gearing up to protest our Saturday event. No hate in Washington state. Hate against LGBTQ plus people is here. Will you stand with us? And they say this Saturday, May 16th, the Snohomish County Republicans are holding a fundraising dinner with Brian Haywood, Brandi Cruz, Katie Faust, and Jim Walsh, focusing on a new target for next year and beyond: ending marriage equality across the United States. You see how now it becomes, not is it just this kind of woman who we didn't know, who people locally don't know, who wants to end same-sex marriage, but now that is the new focus, the new target for me, for Brian Haywood, for the Republican Party in Washington state. Now that's our thing, which is, of course, a lie. I've never heard Jim Walsh advocate for the party to try to end same-sex marriage. I don't know where Brian Haywood stands on the issue, but I'm pretty sure I've never heard Brian Haywood come out against same-sex marriage. I have literally never held that opinion in my life, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be true, because the progressive cabal doesn't worry about truth. Truth isn't important to them. Remember, we talked about it. They have no morality. They don't care about right and wrong, true and false. And so now they take, because their buddies at the Seattle Times gave them this talking point, which I think they gave it to him so that he could legitimize it and then they could use it against us. It's all one big, happy, incestual family of evil. Snoho Indivisible also posted this. I'm going to target Thomas Family Farms, but here's the real kicker. So this ends up on Reddit. Reddit is such a cesspool of violent extremist rhetoric on the left. And there's all sorts of let's get them. What does let's get them mean? That doesn't sound like you're just gonna stand there with a sign. What does let's get them mean? So now, thank you, Seattle Times, by tying us to this woman, who I don't know, but I'm okay with. She holds a mainstream Christian belief, really. I'm not saying all Christians oppose same-sex marriage, but it's a fairly common Christian belief. And then the Seattle Times was sending me emails this week. Are you still going to this event? I'm like, yes. Yes, I am, because I am capable of being in rooms with people I disagree with. It's actually a fairly easy thing to do. You should try it. But now it's all over Reddit. And all these people are gearing up to come protest us. And there's now we have a security issue and now we're going to be there. I thought this was funny, though. So a Redditor sent me this. I protected their Reddit name just in case they'll get banned from other forums. And they laughed because they saw this flyer, right? And they called it out in the Reddit Everett forum. They said, this bill is unrelated to gay marriage, talking about the two initiatives, I think they meant. They're unrelated to gay marriage, and the only person who is publicly against it is Faust. I feel like the flyer is pretty dishonest, and it takes away from what the initiatives are actually all about, which is accurate. The flyer is dishonest, and Faust is the only one who's come out publicly against gay marriage that I know of. I don't think Jim and Brian have. I know Brian hasn't. And then he says, biological boys should not compete in girls' sports. It's unfair and disenfranchises women. I also believe in parental rights. So this Redditor just posted those two things. Hey, your flyer is kind of factually inaccurate. And also, here's an opinion that 80% of Americans hold that boys shouldn't compete. Banned. They banned him on the Everett Reddit. I don't know how you refer to it because I don't use Reddit. Subreddit? Reddit? I don't know what it is. Page? Somebody will tell me. They banned him. He said, what did I say that was ban-worthy? And the moderator says, it isn't usually the case that Reddit will flag the bigots for us, but it's nice when they do it because it makes our job easier. Go whine about LGBT people somewhere else. Nobody wants it here. You've been permanently muted. You will not be able to message the moderators. Because this Redditor said, yeah, boys shouldn't compete in girls' sports. I mean, Reddit is such a cesspool. Isn't that hilarious? And it shows how triggered they are by wrong speech. Or speech they disagree with. And what did I say on the show yesterday? I mean, it's such a small-minded thing that, like, oh my gosh, I can't even be confronted with ideas that challenge my worldview. But like Chloe Cole, the detransitioner, having to cancel her UW event over threats, you just don't go. If you don't want to hear what she has to say, don't go and you won't have to. Nope, it's not enough. The right doesn't do that to the left. The right does not try to absolutely silence opinions they disagree with. They want to debate them on the merits. And it's why on like the, you know, the issue I'm dealing with right now, they want to cancel my speech. I would never try to cancel the speech of someone who's advocating for boys to play against girls, because the more they talk, the more it's obvious that they can't justify their position. But we have facts and reason on our side, and they just don't want to have the debate. So they want to silence people, even if it's permanently, by killing them like they did to Charlie Kirk. Now, I mentioned, because of all the drama happening this week, I said after they filed that fraudulent lie of a PDC complaint against me, because I'm talking too much about the Let's Go Washington initiatives. And it's technically an in-kind contribution to the Let's Go Washington campaign. Well, I have First Amendment rights, and we said on the show, we should hold the first super signer event for Let's Go Washington for their new initiative to repeal the income tax. And we're going to do it on Sunday. So me, my friend Ari Hoffman's like, Brandy, I've got your back. I'm going to be there too. And they'll probably end up filing a PDC complaint against Ari. But we're going to be there with Let's Go Washington. It's the first super signer event, the first opportunity to sign the initiative to repeal the unconstitutional income tax. So it's going to be in Bellevue. And yes, I'm sure this is going to be another. And I know they're going to have security because we can't even exercise our constitutional rights to sign an initiative without the far left trying to scream and screech and hurt us. But we got to do it anyway. So Sunday, you can show up. It's not like an event where there's a schedule. We're literally just going to have the initiatives to be able to sign. So you can show up at 11 a.m. You can show up at 1:58 p.m. It doesn't matter. Just show up at some point. There's a nice parking lot right there where you can actually park your car. So we're making it pretty easy. It's in Bellevue, 222 112th Avenue Southwest in Bellevue. I would love to see you guys. And I think it's important that we show this show of force after all the attacks on this week and come out and get this done. They've only got, I think at this point, 47 days to get more than 400,000 signatures. They'll do it, but everybody needs to get really motivated. All right, this is just a fun one. Can I do a quick little double a dose of unbelievable? Okay. I don't know what's going on. I always try to put myself in the mind of people I disagree with and try to figure out, okay, what has led them to this place? You know, we all have different life experiences or whatever it is. Some issues matter more to certain people. It's near and dear to their heart, whatever it is. I don't get the obsession with trans ideology. I don't get that being like the thing that they're trying to, you know, hurt people over. And I mean, that's what Charlie Kirk was killed over. They're trying to like ruin my career over. It's all this radical gender nonsense. It makes no sense to me. And then I see something like this. So Ryan Mello, who's the Snohomish County executive, and I think Ryan's gay. Oh, I'm sorry. Pierce County executive. I think he's gay, right? I'm pretty sure he is. Maybe Google that. Well, put this up and then maybe Google that for me. So, you know, not a surprise that like LGBT issues might be important to him, but this important? So he's having his first annual spring fundraiser, okay? And there's going to be a drag performer there, which is probably pretty common now amongst Democrats that they've got to have a drag performer at their political fundraisers. But why is the drag performer like the main act, okay? So this Bobby Joe Blessing is giving you confirmed, yes, he is gay. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind that he cares about LGB issues. I just don't think those are connected to T issues. And I don't get why he has a drag performer not only giving the opening remarks at his spring political fundraiser, but two drag performances. He's going to give the opening remarks, and then they're going to have a panel on how to deal with the housing crisis. And then he's going to come up there and perform in drag again. And then they'll go through and talk a little bit about, you know, political priorities, and then bring it on home with another drag performance. You guys help me with this.
And Nick Brown's going to be there.
Nick Brown's in between there.
He's sandwiched in between
the two drag performances. maybe he is the drag performer. I don't think so, though. I can't quite tell. A lot of makeup on, but I don't think so. He's going to talk about protecting Washingtonians, I'm assuming from the Trump administration.
Of course.
Of course. But why do you need... So it's just... It's such an obsession. And I love a good drag show. Man, I've been to some doozies in adult establishments, okay? In adult establishments and not at like a political seriously, how many of these do we go to? And you're sitting there. Is this a morning thing or an evening thing? Do you know... Because these fundraisers tend to be in the morning. Can you imagine sitting there and you're just having your coffee, maybe eating your breakfast and
brunch?
It's brunch?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. And then you get one drag performance and like, what is that going to look like, you know? And then you get another one from the same person. I don't know what to do with these people. They've lost their minds. They're just melted. It's melted. If somebody can go to that, will you go?
Oh, no. It was a brunch.
It is brunch?
I'm right. I don't know where I had that in my head.
Well, because drag brunch.
It was last weekend, by the way.
Oh, it was last weekend. It already happened. Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, now I've ruined it. But sorry. For the love of God, brunch.
But yeah, it was a brunch last weekend. So there you go.
Great. All right.
It's wild. It's just an obsession with anything.
It's an obsession. It's so strange.
Sexual. I don't know how this one doesn't look super sexualized, but it's with that. I don't know. It goes in that theme. And then I don't know. Can we not be serious about like, saving the state?
Literally between talking about the housing crisis and talking and the attorney general.
Yeah.
Drag performance.
Let's, laugh in between, even though these are really serious topics.
I can't. I can't. All right, we're going to talk about this, how the media is treating Spencer Pratt, coming up next in National. First, if you're a landlord in the state of Washington, things are a little crazy right now, especially with all the different housing. It depends what city you're in, but there's state policies that make it really difficult to run rental units right now. But then if you're in a city like Seattle, oh my gosh, you're just buried in new regulations and all of these things. And the Rental Housing Association is the organization that's working on your behalf. They have really important property rights lawsuits that they're pursuing right now, including one before the State Court of Appeals that I think they're actually going to be successful on after watching the arguments. So they're doing a ton of work for landlords all year long, especially during the legislative session, and they still make time to help you on an individual basis. And that's why becoming a member is so important. Supports the work they do, but they also can help you with things like screening and forms and just questions if you're dealing with kind of a ridiculous situation that a lot of landlords find themselves in. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, they are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. I just want to talk about this briefly. Spencer Pratt, I think, is doing such a good job at exposing for people who might not have previously been aware how unfair the legacy news is. It's like they won't question him on his ideas. They won't question him on his policy prescriptions. They want to talk about how he used to be a reality TV star and whether or not he actually lives in the Airstream trailer on the lot where his house burned down in the Palisades. And TMZ did this thing where it called him out, suggesting he was lying, that he's not really living in that trailer. He's living at a swanky hotel in Bel Air. And Spencer Pratt, I loved it. He actually called into TMZ and said, do you guys understand that the reason I don't live in the Palisades is Karen Bass let my house burn down? Like, why does it matter? And he was at one point staying in the trailer, but then there's all these threats and it's just a trailer sitting on an empty lot where him and his family are like exposed. So yeah, they're staying at a hotel and they want to like call him out for swanky hotel. Still not better than his house that burned down. I'm sure that he'd rather be at his house that burned down than he would at a swanky hotel in Bel Air. So they don't want to focus on his ideas. They want to focus on, oh, is he really living in the trailer? Oh, no, he's at a swanky hotel. Oh, he used to be a reality TV star. Nobody liked him back then. It's because he's killing it on the policy prescriptions. And it's just, and he's getting this sense and this taste. And he has a lot of Democrats supporting him. And I don't know if he's going to win the LA mayor's race. I think that's a tough sell to a very, very blue electorate. But I think he has a lot of Hollywood elite types that have started to support his campaign and are now seeing firsthand how the media operates and how it props up Democrats and it does everything it can to crush Republicans. And one thing about why I say I think Spencer is going to have a hard time winning in LA, I'm not saying it's impossible, but social media is not real life. I say that a million times when it comes to political campaigns. You can have 10 million followers on social media. How many of them are actually people who are, you know, living in the area that can vote for you? How many of them actually live in LA? And so I've seen it over and over again where political candidates get some traction online and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, they think that they can win. And then they get like 11% of the vote. And it's like, no, that was social media hype. So as long as Spencer Pratt is actually out, and I have no reason to believe he's not, as long as he's actually out, you know, hitting the ground in LA, meeting people, going to real life places and not just relying on social media and flashy AI videos, I think he stands a better chance. But gosh, whenever people like, oh, they're going to win, like it was Semi Bird had a really good social media campaign when he was governor, but then he got 11% of the vote because social media is not real life. And social media follows and likes and clicks do not equate to votes. So recognize that's very important. All right, it is Thursday, so we leave the insanity of Washington State behind us and check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
So Alligator Alcatraz is going to close soon. Why?
It was always meant to be temporary. Mm-hmm. Facilities like that shouldn't exist in the first place if we're manning our border. But
true.
It was put in place as a temporary overflow to deal with this, you know, crackdown on immigration and illegals in the country for this past year, that they've been really going hard at it. So in addition to the fact that the population of the facility goes almost to capacity and then down to like as low as 100 at one point, it's costing taxpayers $1 million a day to run. Mm-hmm. And I think that now they're kind of ready to wrap it up a little bit. Hopefully there's not as many people out there that they're going to catch, and they can, you know, handle them like they used to, put them in county jails while they're being processed.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally zero people coming across the southern border. So there was always going to be more of a need. And for people who aren't familiar, this was like the ICE temporary detention facility that was put in the middle of the Florida Everglades. And what I think is funny is the media lost its mind when they opened this thing. And now the media is losing its mind because they're closing this thing. So here's Governor DeSantis talking about that.
But I noticed like the media, they're very concerned about the cost of detaining and deporting illegal aliens. They never talk about the cost of having illegal immigration. They never talk about the costs that are imposed on taxpayers because of medical care, the cost on taxpayers for schooling, which were constitutionally required under a flawed Supreme Court decision from decades ago. They never talk about the human cost that the angel moms have suffered at the hands. They don't like talking about the drug cartels' involvement and all this other stuff. So what is the cost of that? What is the cost of allowing illegal immigration to continue to overrun our society?
Because basically the media was throwing a fix like, oh, you built this whole thing in the middle of the Everglades and now you're just going to close it down. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, we needed it. And now we don't. But it was never really like a permanent.
No.
Wasn't it just sort of like fencing and like glorified like tent sort of structures?
Yeah, it was just tents, fencing, trailers, all temporary structures. Mm-hmm. There was almost no permanent structures built. They just utilized kind of what was already there because this is a functioning airport for training pilots.
Yeah.
So there are functioning buildings that they used on location. And, you know, I saw that they were giving vendors on location notice by after the last man is moved, processed, or deported, you can start breaking down and demobilizing the location. And, you know, I was reading some of the stats. I mean, they processed almost 22,000 illegals through that in less than a year, from July last year till now. And every number I read, even the high population and the low population, those are all good numbers. That means it was doing its job.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, I don't know why they can't give credit where it's due. And we're closing it less than a year after it was open.
Yeah.
So
you never saw them do that. You don't see them do that with any other sort of emergency. And the government has to set up things. I mean, when you think about responding to natural disasters, wildfires, the pandemic, you know how many little testing sites and stuff they popped up? I mean, when I got my, I don't remember if it was a test or a vaccine that I got at a temporary structure on an airfield near Arlington, Washington. And so nobody freaked out about that. So anyway, they're all just, the media's lost its mind. This next story is very concerning, but the state of Florida is suing the city of Jacksonville for $5 million. And they say at some municipal buildings, they were keeping logs of gun owners and what kind of guns they owned. Explain.
So Florida is a constitutional carry state. You can carry a weapon on you, a gun on you, just about anywhere except for private buildings.
Okay.
And so as people are coming and going through these buildings in question, which are municipal buildings, city buildings, they're going through security checkpoints. And the security guards at a couple of these buildings were keeping logs of these people carrying the weapons into their building. They're identify their driver's license numbers, the type of weapon they were carrying, and just keeping it to themselves, allegedly. And it was found out because a man came through and realized that he wouldn't provide information about himself to these people and realized they were keeping a log. So he reported it. And that's kind of how all this came to light.
Yeah, it says the logbooks contain more than 140 entries documenting over 100 individuals. And it's explicitly, there's a 2004 state statute that explicitly prohibits local governments from keeping lists or registries of gun owners. And that's de facto what they were doing. And that's strange. Like, I can see maybe if you've got someone going into, and I'm just giving everyone the benefit of the doubt, you got something, somebody going into a building, they've got a gun on them. It's like, okay, you know, let's document this person's name. And just that they're armed, maybe not the kind of firearm. And then you purge it at the end of every day or something like that. But that's not what this was. Here's the Attorney General of Florida talking about this suit against Jacksonville.
Jacksonville City Management approved and implemented a logbook, a gun registry that required security officers to screen visitors and record the visitor's name, age, state-issued ID number, and the weapon type of anyone found to be carrying a firearm. Jacksonville continued this practice until April 2025, when an individual attempted to enter a city building while legally carrying a firearm. The individual was unlawfully denied entry by security officers on duty when he would not provide the requested information.
Yeah, that's absolutely unacceptable because it just seems like a very clear violation of state law. So we'll see what happens there. All right, I think you and I are going to have beef the closer we get to 2028 because I'm all set on Marco Rubio. I mean, things can change. Obviously, in American politics, things change like that. But I just think Marco Rubio is the guy for the job. And you're really just fangirling DeSantis still.
I am. I mean, I think Marco is doing a great job and he's more effective where he is and he can be in that position longer. I think the president is an ineffective position without effective people surrounding you. So I think when people are good at what they're doing, Marco's good at what he's doing right now. He should be there doing that for as long as he can. And then get somebody that's just a great leader, great speaker to be a president and kind of just...
Like Marco's not a great leader, great speaker.
No, he is. I just, you know, it's just how I feel.
Oh, no, your feelings aren't valid. I reject them. But you wanted to play this clip. So DeSantis was giving a commencement speech. Where was it at?
At a local college down here, Ave Maria. He was giving a commencement speech because it is graduation season. And his speech was... fantastic. It was like 14 minutes long, but I had pulled a small little clip of it.
Okay, here you go.
When Benjamin Franklin walked out of the Constitutional Convention, he was asked, "Did you give us a republic or a monarchy?" And his answer was, "A republic if you can keep it." They understood you could have the best Declaration of Independence in the world, you could have the best Constitution in the world. These do not run on autopilot. They require every generation of Americans to step up and defend institutions, defend freedom when they are at risk. And that is as true today as it was then. So the question is, as you go out into the world, goes back to Franklin's admonition. After 250 years, what does the future hold? Can we keep it? Can we preserve it? Can we make the republic better? Well, with faithful and civic-minded graduates like we honor today, who have a great foundation and are wearing the full armor of God, the answer to Franklin's question is, yes, we can keep the republic, and yes, we will keep the republic. Congratulations, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much. Thanks so much.
Yeah, he is great, and he's a great speaker, and don't get me wrong, I think he'd be... The nice thing is, on the Republican side, there are several great options for 2028. And then on the Democratic side, it's Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, and AOC. So.
It's true. It's quite the peanut gallery on the left side.
Good grief. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Well, even if I end up on a gun registry, boating accident, that's what everybody says. Boating accident. Wonder if there's any other sort of accident I could have. I only have one gun, so it's not like, you know, there'd be a lot to lose. All right, we have an update on one of the violent attacks that we talked about at the beginning of the show. But first, there's a lot happening, obviously, in the Middle East with energy, Trump and China. And so our friend Zach Abraham is having one of his free live webinars coming up May 21st. Probably a good one to go to if you're concerned about how all of this is impacting your retirement portfolio. He's calling it his Impact of Energy live webinar, again, May 21st, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. So he's going to discuss a lot of things. Then you do have an opportunity to ask questions if you want. He'll explain how every market is driven by energy, the impact energy has on inflation, and how it could potentially affect your retirement planning, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible, which is, of course, what we all want. So join Zach's Impact of Energy webinar, May 21st, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, totally free. Register now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. While you're there, you can also find out how to watch Zach's daily podcast, sign up for his daily market updates, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, before we get to our show poll and comments, we actually just got an email from George's mother. So George, of course, is the young man who was brutally assaulted with a hammer at random in Seattle, has been unconscious at Harborview Medical Center for 10 days now. So his mom, Lisa, just emailed us and says, George woke up out of sedation this morning. She said, obviously, he's confused, doesn't understand what happened to him, is in a lot of pain, is having trouble speaking. None of that is a surprise. She says, I know the recovery journey will be a long one, but I know that God is going to continue to make miracles happen. I just wanted to give you guys an update. So that is really great news. Now, let's find out who did it to him. Now, SPD, if you don't know, let's get whatever image you have, good or bad, out to the public, because I haven't heard a compelling reason not to do so yet. All right, our daily subscriber show poll. I had to ask you guys about Reddit. I've never been on Reddit. I've never done the Reddit thing, but it seems like there's so many violent leftists on Reddit. What is with that? Why is Reddit a forum for violent leftists or violent leftist ideology where they'll block you for saying boys shouldn't compete against girls?
Well, it seems like it because it's faceless, right? You don't create a profile that really identifies you. Yeah. So you can just say whatever you want and it's all behind
Reddit?
Curtain. No.
Okay. Mm-mm. I asked you guys because I wanted to gauge. I said, do you use Reddit? If so, how often? Never, sometimes, or often? So Nicole says literally never. I mean, never. Sometimes we use it for the show.
Yeah, sometimes,
right?
Where
we get a tip or something that it's, and then it's always a tip about something crazy.
And I honestly don't know how to even sort it on there.
I don't understand Reddit.
It's so messy.
I'm like an old lady. 74% of you said never. 22% sometimes, only 4% of you said often. So yeah, it does seem like it's sort of more for the leftists. Becky says, I only use Reddit when it comes up in a Google search for suggestions on a very specific direction I need, like how to reset my printer ink counter or how to repair a leather purse.
True. I have seen things like that.
And I'm sure there are many subreddits or whatever that have nothing to do with politics that are probably very useful and just fine. Shelley says, it's a rarity, even though I voted sometimes. It's usually because that's what Google brings up. Yeah, that's true. That's probably when I see it as well. Watermelon, Reddit's too predictable. Original thoughts are downvoted to oblivion. Yeah, I wonder whoever posted the boys aren't girls thing, mm-hmm. how many downvotes they got. Jolene, I used it a few times to try to figure out what was going on with my chickens. Okay, so maybe it does have some usefulness.
Instructions.
Yeah, bolt up, only to showcase my woodworking project. So maybe I'm just, my only exposure to it is in the political realm, and I just feel like people are absolutely so loony on there. All right, comments on more random crime in Seattle. I don't give a chuck, says, ready to stand in protest of trying to hide the reality of Seattle. All I want to know is who's coming with me. Thank you for your Daily Boop sponsorship as well. Baron of Gray Matter, Brandy, here's the plan. Hold rallies during World Cup on issues the left loons can't help but protest against. If you rally, they will come. Yeah, and then you show the world what our protest culture is like. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that during the World Cup because the police are going to be so busy, they're not going to be able to come help us if something happens.
That's true.
Yeah,
they'll be scary.
Spread thin. Chris, maybe, just maybe, the world will see what has happened to Seattle during the World Cup. Yeah, I mean, you'll get a lot of healthy foot traffic in these areas. And right now in downtown Seattle, the reason why this sticks out is there isn't a lot of that healthy foot traffic. So some of it will be hidden by just the influx of crowds and people mm-hmm. moving around. Krista, no excuse for not warning the public. Yeah, about the hammer attack. It weirds me out. And the only rationale I can think of is they know who it is and they're trying not to spook him. But it's been 10 days at this point. So, and they told you we're working on releasing an image. So
yesterday.
Right. And they haven't yet. We checked.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, his mom is reminding me to tell everybody that she has a GoFundMe because she wants to sue the city for not keeping people safe. And
I wonder if you can make that case.
I mean, it does. Eventually, something like that has to happen to scare them into some sort of action, because they are not keeping people safe by allowing these people to stay on the streets.
Right. I typically don't share GoFundMes, but I think with this one, if you want to drop the link, maybe you can give it to Miranda and she can drop the link in the chat or something. Where was I at here? Steve on the free shuttles. Free shuttles will make it even easier for drug-addled homeless people to mix with World Cup visitors from around the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the court's failing victims, angry archer outdoors. Judges need to be held accountable for their decisions. Patty, catch and release. That's what's happened. What happened could be prevented and so many more. I don't. You mentioned a name in there, but I don't want to use that name because I don't know if it's a victim's name or whatever it is. Let's see. On Christine Gregoire's comments, Elowin, back when Dems had more, dare I say, common sense. Rick Johnson, Gregoire is a Democrat. We now have far left radical Dem socialists and Marxists. It's a big difference. I had to laugh at Jim Walsh, the chair of the Republican Party. I posted this clip from Christine Gregoire, and I said, wow, former Gregoire goes, Governor Gregoire goes scorched earth on the current Democrats leading the state. And he says, not sure these mild comments qualify as scorched earth. And as others have pointed out, Gregoire is not a credible source on fiscal rectitude. She started some of the budgetary gimmickry that Inslee and Ferguson have made worse. Look, I get it, she's not perfect, but Jim, just take the help. Take the help. If you have a Democrat who's saying that the current Democrats don't know what they're doing, you amplify that.
And if you
you just take the help.
If you compare her to any other Democrat, that's scorched earth.
Right, 100%. Any criticism. Just take the help, Jim. Just accept it. It'll be fine. I guess he is the chair of the Republican Party. It's not really in their wheelhouse to compliment Democrats. But that's why I don't have a party affiliation, so I have no such loyalty. Let's see here. Lancelot, as if having a budget isn't possible. Every American is on a very tight budget. Washington government is legal thievery. On the protest plan for our Saturday event, let's see. Tina Marshall, yet another example of total hypocrisy. No hate in Washington, yet aren't they spreading hate towards those with whom they disagree? Yes. Spreading hate and division under the guise of stopping the spread of hate and division. Doesn't get more obvious than that. Sergeant Buck, you could ask... You could ask for help with a potato salad recipe, and Reddit will still call you a racist.
Apparently. Yes.
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Merwin Wren with a super chat. Buying you a pint. Well, I appreciate that. I don't really drink beer, but how about a glass of wine?
Or a pint of wine, sure.
Pint of wine, yes. How about a pint of bubbly? Thank Take you. It. All right. Thank you, Nicole. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, President Trump was in China to meet with Chinese President Xi. And look, he got a very nice welcome from China. And I already knew the leftists would freak out because they don't understand how Trump negotiates. They, after all these years, they still don't understand how Trump uses charm and sort of personal relationships, how he... I think he really understands the person he's dealing with and what they need to feel respected and to do what he wants them to do. So of course he was acting honored to be there, and you're such a great leader, and he was complimenting him. And it's clear that China wants to start to normalize relations a little bit more. They said they'd start buying more oil from the United States. These are good things, people. These are good things. And Trump even invited the Chinese president and delegation to the White House.
Thank you again, President Xi, for this beautiful welcome. And tonight it is my honor to extend an invitation to you and Madam Peng to visit us at the White House this September 24th. And we look forward to it. And I'd now like to raise a glass and propose a toast to the rich and enduring ties between the American and Chinese people. It's a very special relationship. And I want to thank you again. This has been an amazing period of time. Thank you, President Xi.
Yeah, look, it's you keep your enemies closer. They're communists. I get it. You really think he doesn't understand that? You really think he doesn't understand that China's doing things behind his back, and that if China wanted to today end the Russian war on Ukraine of aggression, China could do that. China could call up Russia and say, we're not helping anymore. They could today end the situation in Iran. He knows that. But you keep your enemies closer.
And then if you make them feel like they can be part of something bigger than that, they can make more money, they can do whatever it is, then he can get them to do what he wants. And he's done it so many times, but the left still doesn't understand it, or they choose to just not understand it. All right, a reminder, on Sunday, we're going to be holding the first super signing event for Let's Go Washington, totally free of charge. What is it? An in-kind contribution, according to the progressives. They can't tell us what to do. They can't tell us how I can use my voice. And they can't assign a price to my voice or regulate my speech. So me, Ari Hoffman, Let's Go Washington, we're going to have a super signer event in Bellevue. And I think it's so important that you make the time to come. You don't have to be there for the whole time. You don't have to be there at the beginning. Just show up at some point, sign it, the very limited on time to collect enough signatures to repeal the unconstitutional income tax. Important to show progressives after the what they've pulled this week that they don't scare us and we're not going to back down.
Or so, if you can't make it, go to Let's Go Wah and print out
have them send you ballots. No, I'm not giving them another option, Nicole.
Okay,
the only option is to come on Sunday.
I want all the signatures.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding.
All of them.
All right. And also, we still have our promo running. It's running through May. A big thank you to all our new subscribers who jumped on board this week. You get 30% off an entire year. Go to patreon.com/undivided, patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code USA30, and it drops the price of supporting this fantastic show to just $3.50 a month. Wowza. Wow. And Nicole's like, shut up, Brandy. she's like playing me off. I'm giving like a long Oscar speech and she's playing me off. Nicole's like ready for the weekend to start. It was a stressful week. It really was. Anyway, I do appreciate you guys all. You feel like family to me, and we're just so grateful to have you and your support and all the nice messages and stuff. I just don't know what I'd do without all of you guys. Well, I guess I wouldn't have a job without all of you, but we do appreciate you, and thanks for fighting for common sense for us. Sundays with subscribers. Subscribers will see you there. The rest of you will see you back here, hopefully on Sunday, actually. And then we'll be back on the live show Monday at noon. I'm just trying to keep jabbering so Nicole continues to give me bad looks. Okay, bye.
Bye.